Chapter 10. The ride up to Window Rock took 4.5 hours, with Red House and me passing the time in innocuous conversation, followed by long lapses of silence. Red House seemed to enjoy my stories about getting to travel the world with my father, and noted that his own travels had been far less extensive. "I've been in the 4 states the Navajo Nation sits in," he said, "and the most time that I spent away from it was when I went to Flagstaff for college. Other than that, been nowhere but here." "Have you wanted to go anywhere else?" I asked. "Sure," he said. "When you're a kid, all you want to do is be somewhere else." "Pretty sure that's a universal thing," I said. "I know," Red House said, and smiled. "And now I don't mind it so much. I like my family better now that I'm older. Have a fiance, have a job." "Did you always want to be a police officer?" I asked. "No," he said, and smiled again. "I went to college for computer science." "That's kind of a left turn," I said. "Just before I went to college, the council decided to invest in a huge server facility outside Window Rock," Red House said. "It would serve the needs of the Navajo and other nations, and then also be used by the surrounding state governments and even the federal government for non-confidential processing and storage, solar-powered and zero emission. It was going to employ hundreds of Navajo and bring millions of dollars into Window Rock. So when I went to college, I studied computing so that I could have a job. The Flagstaff news site even did a story about me and some of my classmates in northern Arizona. They called us the Silicon Navajos, which I didn't like very much." "So what happened?" "We built the facility, and then none of the promised state or federal contracts came in," Red House said. "We were told about budget cuts and reorganizations and changes in agendas and new governors and presidents coming in. We have this state-of-the-art facility now, and it's operating at 3% of capacity. Not so many people got hired to staff it at 3%. So I went to the police academy and became a police officer." "Sorry about the switch," I said. "It's not so bad," Red House said. "I had family who were officers before me, so you could say it was a tradition. And I'm doing some good, so that helps. But if I'd known my degree was going to be useless, I might not have scheduled so many 8 a.m. classes. Did you always want to be an FBI agent?" "I wanted to be one of those CSI agents," I said. "Problem for that was my degree is in English." "Oof," Red House said. "We'll see the computer facility as we drive in. You can get a look at what wasted potential looks like." An hour later, just south of Window Rock, we rolled by a large, featureless building surrounded on 3 sides by solar panels. "I'm guessing that's it," I said. "That's it," Red House said. "The one positive thing about it is that since we don't need all the solar capacity we installed, we sell energy to Arizona and New Mexico. At least you'll make a profit somehow." "I wouldn't call it a profit," Red House said. "It just means running the computer facility bleeds us more slowly than it would otherwise. My mother worked for the council. She says that they're going to give it a couple more years, tops." "What will they do with the building?" I asked. "That is the question, isn't it, Agent Shane?" Red House said. He sat up, pressed a button on his dash, and took over manual control of the police car. "Now, let's get you checked in at the station, and then we can take you to go see Johnny Sonny's family. My captain is probably going to want to have an officer accompany you. Is that going to be a problem?" "I don't think so." "Okay, good," Red House said. "Is it going to be you?" I asked. Red House smiled once more. "Probably." Sonny's family lived in a well-kept double-wide in an otherwise less-than-spiff trailer park outside of Sawmill. The family consisted of a grandmother and a sister. Both sat on a couch, looking at me, numbly. "Why would he kill himself?" his sister, Janice, asked me. "I don't know," I said. "I was hoping you might be able to tell me." "How did he do it?" asked the grandmother, May. "Shimasani, you don't want to know that," Janice said. "Yes, I do," May said, forcefully. I looked over to Red House, who was standing next to the chair I was sitting in, holding the glass of tea they offered him. They offered me one as well. It sat on the table in front of me, between me and Sonny's relatives. Red House nodded at me. "He cut his throat," I said. May looked at me balefully but said nothing else. Janice held her grandmother and looked at me expressionless. I waited for a couple of minutes and then began again. Our records show, I said, and then stopped. Well, actually, we don't have any records for John.
Johnny,
Janice said. Excuse me, I said. Johnny. All the records we have for Johnny are from here, from the Navajo Nation. So our first question is why that's the case.
Until last year, Johnny never left here, Janice said.
All right, I said. But why is that?
Johnny was slow, Janice said. We had a doctor test him when he was 13. He said his IQ was 79 or 80. Johnny could figure things out if he worked at it, but it took him a long time. We kept him in school as long as we could so he could have friends, but he couldn't keep up. He stopped going, and we stopped making him go. He wasn't always that way, May said. He was a smart baby, a smart little boy. When he was 5, he got sick. He wasn't the same after that.
Was it Hayden's? I asked.
No, May said. He wasn't crippled.
She stopped and considered what she had said.
Sorry.
I held a hand up. It's perfectly all right, I said. Sometimes people get sick with Hayden's, but they don't get locked in. But it can still do damage. When you say he got sick, did he have a fever and then meningitis?
His brain swelled up, May said. That's meningitis, I said.
We scanned his brain after he died, and we saw the brain structure there that was consistent with Hayden's. But we found something else, too. We found that he had something we call a neural network in there, too.
Janice looked up at Red House for this. It's like a machine in his head, Janice, he said. It let him send and receive information.
I have one in my head back home, I said, and tapped my head. It lets me control this machine here so I can be here in the room with you. Janice and May both looked confused.
Johnny didn't have anything in his head, May said, finally.
I apologize for asking, but...
Are you completely sure? I asked.
A neural network isn't something that's accidentally put into someone's head. It's there to either send brain signals or to receive them.
He lived with me his entire life, May said. He lived here with his mother and Janice, and then when his mother died, I looked after him. No way this could happen to him here.
So it would have to have been put in after he left, Red House said.
About that, I said. Why would Johnny decide to leave here if he'd never gone anywhere in his life?
He got a job, Janice said.
What kind of job? I asked.
He said he was an executive assistant, Janice said.
For whom?
I don't know, Janice said.
Johnny got a friend to take him down to that computer building in Window Rock, May said. He'd heard they had an opening for a janitor, then that was something he could do. He wanted to be able to help me out. He went down and asked about the job, and then the next day they asked him to come down again. And then, when he came back that night, he gave me $1,000 and told me it was half of his first paycheck from his new job.
The janitorial position, Red House said.
No, the other one, May said.
He said when they got there, they asked him if he would like a different job that would pay better and let him travel. All he'd have to do is help his boss do things. He said it was like being a butler.
So he left, I said.
What then?
Every week I'd get a money order from Johnny, and he would call sometimes, May said. He told me to move someplace nice and get new things. So I moved here. Then, a few months ago, he stopped calling, but the money order still arrived, so I didn't worry too much.
When did the last money order arrive?
It came 2 days ago, Janice said. I picked up my grandmother's mail for her.
Do you mind if I look at it? I asked.
They both looked dubious at this. Aiden Shane isn't going to take it as evidence, Red House said. But it might have something on it that's important. Janice got up to get the money order.
Johnny never said anything about who he worked for? I asked May.
He said that his boss liked to be private, May said. I didn't want Johnny to lose his job, so I never asked more than that.
Did he like his job? I asked.
By this time, Janice had walked over to me with the money order. I scanned it quickly on one side, flipped it over and did the same to the other side, then handed it back to her.
Thank you, I said.
He seemed to like it, May said. He never said anything bad about it.
He was excited to travel, Janice said, sitting down again. The first couple of times he called, he mentioned that he was in California and in Washington.
The state or the district? Red House asked.
The district, Janice said, I think. But then he said his boss didn't like him talking about where he'd been, so he didn't say any more.
The last time he called, did he say anything unusual or tell you anything unusual? I asked.
No, May said. He said he hadn't been feeling well. No. He said he was worried about something.
Worried about what? I asked.
A test? May ventured. Something that he had to do that he was nervous about? I don't remember.
Okay, I said.
When do we get him back? Janice asked. I mean, when does he get to come home?
I don't know, I said. I can check. He needs to be buried here, May said. I'll see what I can do, I said. That's a promise.
May and Janice looked at me, expressionlessly. They handled it well, I said, after Red House and I left the trailer and headed to the car. Some of us try not to show too much emotion about death, Red House said. The thinking is, if you go on about it, you can keep a spirit from moving on. Do you believe that? I asked. It doesn't matter whether I believe it or not, Red House said. Fair point, I said. Anything on the money order? Serial number and routing information, I said. You want it? I wouldn't mind, Red House said. I don't know if the FBI would be happy with you for sharing information. I think my partner would tell me that sharing with the local police is the polite thing to do, unless you hate that cop in particular. You have an interesting partner. That I do, I said, and got into the car. Let's go down to the server farm. Johnny Sonny, Lauren Begay said. He was the head of HR for the Window Rock Computational Facility, as well as the head of several other departments, including sales and janitorial. The staff at WRCF was as bare bones as Red House had advertised. I went to school with him, for a while.
I'm asking about something a little closer in time than that, I said. His family said he applied for a job here last year, is that right?
He did, Begay said. Had to fire a janitor for sleeping on the job. Needed someone who could take the overnight shift. He applied. So did 60 other people. I gave it to one of the other janitor's sister. Johnny Sonny's family said that you called him back for a follow-up, and that's when he got offered a different job, Red House said.
I never called him back, Begay said.
You didn't? I asked.
Why would I call him back? Begay asked.
The man's slow as they come. He could barely fill out the application. You don't need much of an education to push a broom, Red House said.
No, but I want someone with enough sense not to touch any buttons he's not supposed to, Begay said. This place isn't to capacity, but we still have clients.
Who are your clients, Mr. Begay? I asked. Begay looked over to Red House. It's okay, Red House said. Begay looked unconvinced about the okayness, but spoke anyway. All of the nation's governmental departments are in here, plus a few others from nations around the country. Then we've got a few private clients, mostly businesses from around here or that do business around here. The biggest of those would be Medicord.
What's Medicord? I asked.
Medical Services Company, Begay said. They contract to run the nation's medical services. Been doing that for 6-7 years. I remember when they came in, Red House said. Promised to train and promote Navajo medical personnel in return for an exclusive contract.
Have they?
I asked. Red House shrugged.
It's quasi-governmental and confidential medical information, so Medicord keeps all the Navajo data here instead of linking it up with the rest of their network, Begay said.
No one else would use this facility to do a job search? I asked. I wish they would, Begay said. We've got the office space and we could use the business, but no.
Do any of the private companies send reps or IT guys here?
The companies we got, if they had an IT department, they probably wouldn't need us so much, Begay said. But they don't need to come here anyway. They can access their servers and data remotely with standard software. What we do is host and act as backup if, for some reason, what IT people they have do something stupid, which does happen. Can someone hack into this place? I asked. I should tell you no, but you're a Hayden, so I'm guessing you're not stupid about these things, Begay said. So I'll tell you that if anything is connected to the outside world, it's hackable. That said, all the nation data is on servers that are accessible only from nation computers that are either GPS tagged or require two-factor authentication or both. And that includes this Metacord company, I said. It does, said Begay. Why are you asking about Johnny Sani? He died, I said. It's too bad, Begay said. He was a nice guy. I thought you said he was slow. He was slow, Begay said. Doesn't mean he wasn't nice.
This keeps getting more fucked up as we go along, doesn't it? Van asked me.
It was 7:30 in D.C., and from the ambient sound around her, I could tell she was in a bar again, possibly picking up from last night on her quest to get laid. I was in the Window Rock Police Department at a spare desk using my inside voice. We have two choices at this point, I said. We have to believe that either a guy who couldn't get a job pushing a mop is also a savant integrator who somehow lured Nicholas Bell into that hotel room on the pretense that he was a tourist looking for a thrill, or we have to believe that someone tricked this poor son of a bitch away from his home, implanted a neural network in his head, and then convinced him to play along with their plan, whatever that was, which somehow involved Bell. And then commit suicide, Van said. Don't forget that. How can I forget? I said. I talked to this guy's family today. On a brighter note, I got a judge to okay our record pull for Bell and Kearney, Van said. And? Bells don't tell us anything we didn't already know, Van said. Bell just signed a long-term contract with Lucas Hubbard, as in just today. He is also first call with a bunch of well-off Haydens when he's not tied up with Hubbard. And then he does piecework for the NIH, just like every other integrator. Well, until next Monday when Abrams Kettering kills that little program. What about Kearney, I asked. He's got a long-term contract, too, Van said. And, as it happens, his is with one Samuel Schwartz, lead counsel for Accelerant. That explains last night, I said. You lost me, Van said. Hubbard and Schwartz were at my dad's little soiree last night, I said. Hubbard was writing Bell, but Schwartz was writing a woman integrator. Said that his usual integrator had a previous engagement. Yeah, blowing up Loudon Pharma, Van said. Who was the woman integrator? I don't know, I said. You know it's not polite to ask. Go to the DC integrator listings, Van said. You'll find her. So, Bell with Hubbard and Kearney with Schwartz, I said. What about it? Doesn't that seem a little coincidental, I asked. That two integrators involved in weird shit on the same day work for the two most powerful people at the same corporation? Yeah, I said. Honestly? Van said. Yeah. But here's the thing about that. There's 10,000 working integrators in the whole world. Maybe 2,000 of them are in the U.S., so there aren't that many of them to go around. D.C.'s got maybe 20 in the area. Meanwhile, there are probably 100,000 Haydens in the area, because Haydens flock to urbanized areas that can support them. One integrator for 5,000 Haydens, you're going to see a lot of overlap. Maybe, I said. Definitely, Van said. If you want to start making connections, we're going to need more to go on. All right, one more data point to throw at you, I said. Metacord. What about it? Medical Care and Services Company, I said. Has the contracts here in the Navajo Nation. Okay, Van said, so? Metacord is part of Four Corners Blue Cross, I said. Guess who Four Corners Blue Cross is owned by? If you say Accelerant, you're going to make me unhappy, Van said. Have another drink, I suggested. I'm pacing myself, Van said. I want to be able to feel later tonight. A lot comes back to Hubbard and Schwartz and Accelerant, I said. We have too much piling up for it to be coincidence. I mean, hell, Schwartz is even Bell's lawyer. All right, Van said, but let me say it again. If you're going to suggest Schwartz was somehow complicit with the Loudon Pharma bombing, you're going to need more than an integrator contract. And you're forgetting that when the bombing was going down, Schwartz was at a party with one of the most famous men on the face of the earth and an FBI agent who, if hauled up in front of a court, would have to admit to seeing him there. You are his alibi, Shane. There is that, I said. Plus, Bear was actually Kearney's client, Van said. He contracted with him 3 times in the last 2 years. It's evidence of a prior relationship.
Not all of my ideas are going to be gold, I said.
Stop thinking for the evening, Van said. You've done enough for the day. When are you coming back?
I'm about to finish up here, I said. The Window Rock police are letting me park my loaner 3P here for a couple of days in case I need to come back. Once that's squared away, I thought I might try visiting that place I'm renting a room in.
Crazy idea, Van said. Get to it. Good night, Shane.
Wait, I said.
Talking to you is cramping my evening's planned festivities, Van said.
Johnny Sonny, I said.
What about him?
The family wants the body back.
When we're done with him, they're welcome to him. The FBI will work with them so they can have someone pick up the body.
I don't think his grandmother and sister have that sort of money, I said.
I don't know what to tell you about that, Shane, Van said.
All right, I said. I'll let them know.
I hung up and switched back over to my outside voice.
I'm about done here, I said to Red House.
No one's using that desk, he said, pointing to where I was sitting. If you want to just plug in there, there's a socket on the floor. Captain told me to ask you to let us know before you're going to drop by, but otherwise you're fine for a few days.
I appreciate it, I said.
Did you talk to them about Sonny's body? Red asked.
I did, I said.
When we're done with it, I'll give you a contact in D.C. to have the body shipped.
That's not going to be cheap.
When they find out how much it is, let me know, I said. I'll have it dealt with.
Who do I tell them is dealing with it? Red House asked.
Tell them it's an anonymous friend, I said.